All right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again. It is the Dom and Colin podcast. I am Colin here with you today for a little more Survivor Season 40 coverage. No Dom this week, but joining me is someone who is a regular co-host on this podcast coverage of MTV's The Challenge, and you can now find him covering the breaking new season of Love Island US with another great friend of the podcast, Kirsten McInnes, over on the RHAP Reality TV Rehapups feed. Welcome back to the show, Brian Scally. Scally, how's it going?
I am good. Very excited to be here. Very excited to talk about Survivor. Not quite as excited as I would have been 24 hours ago when we planned on talking about it. But ultimately, like we've said, it's good that we have this news before we record it.
It has been a day in the Survivor world, to say the least. Yeah, we were originally going to do this podcast last night. Ended up pushing it, thinking time wasn't really of the essence. We can find a more convenient point. And then about 12 hours ago at the time of this recording, the Survivor social media world was just completely set on fire by Redmond releasing the news that Edge of Extinction is back for Survivor 40. So what we are theoretically here to do today is a draft that we've had in mind for a little while, talking through the possibility of who might be this season's zero vote finalist. But I think before we get into all of that, we should definitely address the major news that has really just been taking over the entire Survivor world today, and bear down a little bit on that Edge of Extinction twist being back in play. And I'm sure it will impact the way that the draft ends up going. But just your first thoughts, Scally, at the top of the podcast, when you heard that Edge of Extinction is going to be back for this all-winter season that everyone has been looking so much forward to.
Sheer horror. I mean, I have been very excited. I will say I was horrified, but like it wasn't completely unexpected. Everyone really talked about how season 38, they did it as a test run for all winter season. They dropped tons of money on appearance fees for these winners, and they don't want to lose them all early, especially all the big names, and end up in a game changers or the first all-star scenario in their eyes. So I know why they did it. I'm not happy about it. I know that with Edge of Extinction on the first one, a lot of people speculated also that they threw the four returnees out there to give them one last shot of being on this all winners cast. But ultimately, very, very disappointed.
Yeah, I think you are right that it is largely CBS looking to like protect their investment in these bigger players that they've paid a lot of money to come back for this season, who are probably pretty big targets early on. And simultaneously, I think, with Jeff Probst being the casting director, essentially, starting with season 39, his proclivity towards specifically Boston Rob may have influenced things here a little bit as well. But yeah, I'm with you and with just the general consensus takeaway, at least according to my Twitter timeline, that sheer horror was without question my initial response. And after having a little time to process it, I haven't really come down off of that yet. I'm still, while I do understand the practical reasons on CBS's end for this being in play, I'm just so disappointed that a season I've been waiting a couple decades for at this point is going to be so heavily impacted by this twist that, as far as I'm concerned, really turns Survivor into just a completely different game. And that is not something that I can see myself really squaring anytime soon.
Yeah, I had a really hard time with just the last time this was in play. Everyone, I mean, I will admit it wasn't unwatchable on like an episode to episode basis, but I had a really hard time just getting it out of my head. Like, this is all going to come crashing down. It's all going to come crashing down in just a few episodes. And beyond my wildest dreams did that happen. Now, with CBS seeing ultimately how that played out, I'm more surprised than I otherwise would have been. Like, if Devins had won and this came back, wouldn't be as surprised. Given the result that we did have last time, I thought, you know what? Maybe they touched the fire, they got burnt, they'll back away. But they dove face first. They're all in on the Edge of Extinction for this season. And I will say, brought up by the aforementioned Kirsten McInnes to me earlier today, the smallest like ray of hope that I have is that at least some of these people are like plugged into social media, and they were around for the airing of the finale and saw the reaction and saw how it went over, and maybe, just maybe, will be inclined to not vote for someone who re-enters the game, especially after such an extended period of time. But that is, you know, the smallest ray of sunshine in this storm.
Yeah, the one person that I've found who had a positive takeaway, and I think this is an enormous indicator, is my good friend Casual Anna, who is just a casual Survivor fan. Regular listeners of the podcast will have heard from her before, and I genuinely always find it truly valuable to get her take on things, because I really do believe that, you know, people like you and me and everyone else, you know, the vast majority of people hearing this, frankly, while we don't always agree on everything, do certainly exist in at least something of kind of a Survivor echo chamber that is really specific to the superfan community. But when I broke the news to Casual Anna that Edge of Extinction was going to be back for the all winter season, her immediate reaction was, quote, yay, more Boston Rob. And I think that is going to be the reaction from a lot of people. And to go back to it, I do, from that perspective, understand why CBS, particularly in the case of Boston Rob, views that as a commodity worth protecting, because there's very little else that can draw in the casual fan to that same degree. My concern is just the same thing I've been concerned about for years at this point, which is that as someone who is kind of like religiously devoted to the concept of process over outcome in terms of determining what is a good decision and what is a good thought process, you know, looking at the line of thinking rather than the way it ends up actually going, and that being what matters, I just cannot overlook what a borderline to me is like offensive in terms of impacting this game, this season that should be so legendary, played by some of the, you know, a lot of the greatest players of all time. And in terms of just process over outcome being the lens through which I view the production decision making, I cannot help but go back to my feeling that I've put out there on many podcasts over the last year or so, which is, it really seems to me like David versus Goliath was just a fluke, that, you know, it was so good almost despite the producers' best efforts to make it much worse than it ended up being. And seeing that they are so eager, even in a season that I would say has a historic and historically strong cast in terms of ability to carry itself, no matter how the game ends up going, for them to still feel compelled to throw Edge of Extinction back in, despite pretty much no one, superfan or casual alike, really loving the season 38 outcome, to me just indicates a staggeringly flawed process, to the point that I really don't know how I can have virtually any faith in them going forward. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm quitting Survivor or whatever. I still think the show is fundamentally, or the game is fundamentally strong enough that we can still routinely fluke good seasons with good casts. But I am now going to be just endlessly worried about production and a lot of the what I would consider just pandering that is going on. And I will happily acknowledge I know absolutely nothing about keeping a show on air in primetime television on network TV in the year 2019. I'm sure they have a ton of very justifiable reasons to do this, but in terms of just the state of the game Survivor, I think this is one of the worst signs we've seen in a very long time.
Yeah, I even in like our circles of Twitter, I did see the sentiment thrown around a lot, like, you know what, okay, at least I'm gonna get 35 days of Tony, I'm gonna get 35 days of Kim or Tyson or whoever someone's favorite is. I mean, I was already very confident that I will be getting 39 days of Natalie Anderson, so that I did not have that same like comfort blanket. But it's just, it is what it is at this point. Definitely impacts how I'm going to view the season as a whole, how I'm gonna do this draft, any future drafts. I'm nervous.
Yeah, and I would add for the record that despite all of my objections to this and everything I've said over the years about the overt pandering and turning Survivor into Big Brother, and needing a twist every single week being the fast track to the downfall of this franchise, it remains the case that the number one concern for me, even seeing an all-winter season, obviously I'm not counting it as ruined just yet. I still think it has a lot of chance to be very, very good, but even seeing all of these kind of game design flaws, as I would consider them, my number one concern going forward for Survivor continues to be production interference. So I want to, even with all of this, that is still the thing that terrifies me the most. It seems like the wheels are completely falling off in that department. And I am very nervous about that continuing to be the case in this all winter season, but, that will be something that it's going to take a little while to see how it ends up going. But yeah, it has been, as I said, quite a day here in the Survivor just Twitterverse. And so I'm glad, Scally, that the timing ended up working out where we could address this at the top of the show.
Yeah, very much so. I was going to even joke with the first thing I came on and say, all right, we know that Boston Rob was the first one voted out. Propes yelled, grab the mast, and how this is how it came about. So I am maybe not feeling so good about some of our favorites. And I think it was Redmond who said, even, I don't know if this translates to the casual audience, but we want to see our favorites play the game. I don't want to see them play house on an island for 30 something days. So Edge of Extinction, while yes, I get some characters out of it, and I enjoyed Reem, I basically got nothing from anyone else last season on Edge of Extinction at all.
Yeah, I am completely with that. The door is certainly open with a cast this big that, hey, maybe the Edge of Extinction segment could be a home run every single time. It just feels like such a crutch. And again, I don't want to make it seem like I am unaware of the obvious kind of casual viewership being meaningful to the executive producers. And I understand that we are few and they are very, very many in the grand scheme of things. And I'm always terrified of sounding super entitled during these kind of discussions about just this isn't the way I want to see the show being run. And thus it's horrible and I'm going to complain forever. It just, in the case of Edge of Extinction, comes back to me, as I said earlier, it comes back to the idea of this being a twist that just so drastically undermines the fundamental premise of the game, and that being just an impossible warning sign to overlook about the future of the franchise. But still, on the whole, very much looking forward to season 40, I want to be clear.
Yeah, and I will say also about season 38, it's not my last ranked season. It definitely gets pulled down, but I generally will rank a season based on how many episodes are enjoyable, how like much do I enjoy it on a week-to-week basis, but then also on a rewatch. So, again, we're not writing it off completely, but it's just cause for concern for this season and future seasons.
Yeah, so we are going to momentarily be doing a draft for avoiding the zero vote finalist in this year's final tribal council. I'll get into the details in a moment, but I don't think it would tip the draft order too much to get your take on just how you think this cast, having seen Edge of Extinction play out. I believe they left for Fiji like the night of the Edge of Extinction finale, so this would be very much front of mind for all of them. Do you see them embracing the idea of Edge of Extinction being an equally valid kind of path through the game the same way it seems like the jury did on 38? Or is this a group that in your mind is going to value a more traditional kind of Survivor game?
I would say, when looking at the majority of names, I would say, all right, I really feel like there's a good shot that we have a fair amount of the cast who can, oh, they'll talk people into, oh, well, that's not the real game. It's separate. It's shouldn't be held to the same level. But just seeing what, like, we got to the point where Aubrey and David were voting for someone who was voted out fourth. So I can't really put too much faith in anyone that I don't know personally to value this game as much as I do, or many of us do. I think that when you have someone like Rob and Tyson and Amber and Sandra and whoever else that's been friend for however long, it's going to be a hard ask to say, don't vote for them, even though I know you're actually close with them and you don't care about these two people at all. but because they were voted out for 3 votes during the game.
Yeah, I, as someone who has seen all of the All-Star seasons in the past, am very aware of the mental gymnastics jurors are able to do, and I am not at all ruling out the possibility that one of the re-enterers from Edge of Extinction wins in a landslide. I think it's absolutely in play that the jury ends up voting completely personally, as they often do on these All-Star seasons.
Yeah, I don't think that we'll probably get someone who was like voted out first or second. I'm hoping for that at least, but I'm very worried.
It's going to be hard for it to be any weirder than the first time around, if that's any comfort.
That is a consolation. Yeah. So we will see. I really am not. I also think them having seen that Chris could come back and win on season 38, they're not going to then assume, like the few people that might have otherwise are not going to assume, oh, this is an easy person to take to the end and will actually make the move against them, won't let their guard down, and hopefully send them right back on their way.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I just wish we could avoid seeing how it plays out, but a little late for that. We'll find out how this ends up impacting things, and hopefully the damage can be minimal. And I will also add, I'm sure Dom and I will be back in here talking about this sort of thing relatively soon, so stay tuned on that front as well. Scally, let's get into the main event here today. I alluded to the rough way that this is going to go, but of course, we have seen in the long history of Survivor having a final three at this point that far more often than not, someone in the finals ends up getting 0 votes. And I thought it would be interesting to do a draft of who that person is going to potentially be out of this group of all winners who at some point in their lifetimes, at least once, have come away with the majority of the jury votes. I still think it is fair to bet that at least one person may come out of this with a 0 vote finalist now being on their resume. And today what we're going to do is not quite be drafting who's going to get 0 votes. The way we're going to do this is drafting who will definitely not be the 0 vote finalist. And so we're going to be trying to avoid drafting that person, and whoever ends up with the 0 vote finalist or finalists and will end up losing this draft.
Yeah, I definitely am looking. I mean, on my draft board completely changed knowing Edge of Extinction is in play. At first glance, my thought was, oh, well, this is kind of ruined because we're going to have 17 jurors, barring any medical evacuations, I would assume. And it's hard to imagine someone getting 0 votes out of that. But with Edge of Extinction, I really don't think that they can limit, not that they do in Ponderosa, but I don't think they're going to limit how much they're talking about the game, considering that one of them will be re-entering. And so I feel like we will end up getting that groupthink, and it should come down to at least very heavily in favor of one or two people.
Yeah, I think with such a big jury, you are right that there's a lot more chance for one random person to cast a vote for someone who doesn't really have much of a competitive shot in the grander scheme of things. But at the same time, knowing how many people are going to be voting and how many votes it takes to win may also incentivize people to make their jury votes count rather than make them heard. So while we could easily come away from this season with no 0 vote finalists, and it turns out that you and I have just wasted our time doing this whole draft, I still think it will be fun to go through this cast. I definitely would love to hear your takes, not only from the perspective of how likely they are to get 0 votes, but as people are coming off the board, to hear your thoughts on their just chances in general, and hopefully this should be a good time along the way. It's been a little while since we've done much season 40 content, but one thing that I want to just quickly let you touch on before we get into this is I referenced it at the top of the show. You and Kirsten, the twice now aforementioned Kirsten McInnes, have begun podcasting about Love Island, the U.S. version, over on reality TV Rehap Ups. You had Rob Cesternino on as your guest for the first episode of that. And before I forget to do this at the end of the show, I wanted to just quickly give you a chance to plug that and to potentially let our audience, who may not be as predisposed to the romantic reality TV world, may not know even necessarily that much about Love Island, make the pitch to those folks and let us know what's been going on here with this new CBS franchise.
Okay, so what I said in a text earlier is, as of 12 hours ago, the best CBS reality show, apparently, now. Love Island takes itself a lot less seriously than a lot of the other dating shows. And also there are, like, audience votes where if a couple is boring or they're just not likable or whatever, the audience will just vote them off the show. So you don't get stuck with, like, these long-term couples who just sit by themselves and don't talk to anyone. It is a giant hit in the UK and Australia. They will get millions and millions of followers. A few of them who have only been on the show for a week or so have made their way over to the challenge, so you may know some of them, Theo and Georgia. It's on the US version. It has not taken off to that degree yet, and the premiere is always a little slower, but I know the 5 days a week is very intimidating. But it is the type of show where you can just jump in for an episode. You're not going to feel like you're lost. It's like random making fun of the Islanders and the show in general. There's a voiceover guy who will come on and just make jokes. He's definitely improving. And if you decide to watch one, two, or whatever and then check out the podcast, I think you also will find value in that.
Yeah, I was just listening to your episode one or two, or week one podcast, I guess, where you and Kirsten mm-hmm. mentioned that the beginning tends to be potentially even like the worst part of the season. But I am absolutely willing to dive in and give this show a look, especially just with the current state of other CBS reality TV shows not called The Amazing Race. Why not give Love Island a crack? So Scally and Kirsten over on the reality TV Wrap-Ups feed every week for the next, a 5 week season, and it's airing in real time, right? It's like Big Brother, where the episodes are being cut together and they're currently out there filming.
Yeah, so they're currently filming. They'll air Monday through Friday, you know, generally 24 hours after. I'm sure Monday will be more of a weekend wrap up. But so it will sum up what's happened in the villa, go over, new people will enter, people will leave, and it's running for about a month. So it's an easy to jump in for a month. You don't have to commit. There's no live feeds. You don't have to worry about that and finding out about everyone's numerous flaws, but it's, lots to make fun of.
All right. Excellent. So with that, let's get into this. Let's get into the must not draft the zero vote finalist draft of 2019. And Scally, we will do a snake draft. So one of us will get the number one pick and then the other person will go 2 and 3. And we will just take back to back picks the whole way from that point forward. Do you have a preference? Do you want the number one pick or do you want to go 2 and 3?
I don't have a strong preference. I guess I will go 2 and 3 unless you have a strong.
No, that's fine with me. I will, okay. I will gladly take this opportunity, to, with the number one overall pick in the must not be a zero vote finalist draft. It's been long overdue. This pick is something that has been in the works since the very beginning of this podcast. It is finally time to extend the ultimate olive branch to my girl, Sandra Diaz-Twine. Will never come out of this with zero jury votes in the finals.
Yeah, she is actually my number two. I think there's someone who is maybe a little less likely, but I think there's a 0.0% chance that this is happening.
Yeah.
If she makes it, she deserves all of the votes, basically. Yeah.
I'm totally with that. As much as I've had to say about Sandra and her gameplay over the years, I don't even care about how she makes it there in the timeline where she makes it there. I'm with you. I think everyone should just unanimously give it to Sandra and have her be just so far ahead of the pack. And it's to the point that I'm wondering if losing finalist is even in play for Sandra, despite what I would categorize at least her first two times around as a social game that leaves quite a bit to be desired. I still don't know what timeline would have to exist where she makes it to the finals and doesn't win. It seems like the case for Sandra is so overwhelming in any circumstance where she's able to make it to day 39 again.
Yeah, I think given how big a lot of the names are on this cast and who she is close with outside of this game, I really do think there is the, you know, smallest of chances. And I will say I would vote for her regardless unless she had been voted out of the game and re-entered. But I don't see that being in the cards for her. So I really agree with the pick. Sandra is never, ever coming away with zero votes.
Yeah. And more generally on Sandra, how are you viewing her just chances overall? Because I'm making this the number one pick purely because all that matters in this draft is the timeline where this person is in the finals. It doesn't make a difference in any scenario where they're not in the end. So it's a lot easier to take Sandra number one overall in that context. But I will happily grant there may not be too many timelines where Sandra is there still active on day 39. What do you think about just her overall prospects?
I do not think Sandra is going to be making the deepest of runs, but I actually don't think she's going to go out in the first, you know, three or four votes. I think that there are just people that if someone wants to grab like a stranglehold on their tribe, I still think even though Sandra had a couple of very, very impressive tribal councils in Game Changers that are in recent memory, I don't know that people are looking at her over some of the other names on this list as a threat to organize an alliance against themselves.
Yeah, I know she is famously a big pre-gamer, so perhaps that reputation may have caught up with her at this point, or at least in the more modern season, she has been a very active pre-gamer, to say the least. So I generally think I'm with you that I think she'll have at least a short-term safety net. It's just the reputation of being Sandra Diaz Twine and everyone probably knowing that, you know, once we hit the merge, there is going to quickly be very little reason to vote her out over pretty much anyone else until we get to the very end. And who really wants to deal with another season of Sandra just being able to get through completely unchecked? And I the cat is obviously out of the bag, I guess, is the overall takeaway on Sandra. And just because she's won twice and everyone else has only won once, that target is never, ever going to go away. But I am with you that I think early on, she's not the lock first boot the same way, you know, a few years ago, I think people may have thought would be the case.
Yeah, I am excited to see Sandra back. I think that between season 39 and this, we are going to be getting a lot of Sandra, but especially I'm currently doing a rewatch, just finished Pearl Islands. Very excited to see Sandra back and hoping for good.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so there goes Sandra with the number one pick, and I am officially the number one Sandra fanboy, Fandra. So, Scally, it's over to you with the second and third picks.
Okay, I am going to go with one of the only people that I think could beat Sandra in Boston Rob. Mm-hmm. I just think that you are going to have the combined, he is as big of a name as Sandra is, while also being more likely to be looked at as the leader of an alliance, whether that be correctly or incorrectly. But I think that people are going to, there's no way that he comes away with zero votes, especially considering how many friends he has on this cast.
How many spouses he has potentially on the jury as well.
Yes, that is also a consideration. So I don't think Rob is getting there, but I think if he does, it, again, a 0.0% chance that he's walking away with zero votes in this.
Yeah, Sandra and Boston Rob were the very easy top two on my board, and I wanted to symbolically take Sandra with the number one overall pick, given that I haven't had many opportunities to do that over the course of 7.5 years of podcasting here. But yeah, I'm with you. I think if anyone has a chance of beating Sandra in a final vote, and I don't know what kind of circumstances it would take for the two of them to actually be there against each other, I think Boston Rob has got to be on the very short list.
Yeah, completely agree with everything you said.
Yeah.
As for my next pick, I was debating a few people, but ultimately I'm going to go with someone who I think is a big target, probably won't make it, but if they do, they're so likable, I can't see how they don't get one vote. I'm going Kim.
Okay. Kim, also quite high on my board as well. And she's in the tier there. I actually have one other person. I had a very easy top three, with the top two being, Boston Robin Sandra, and the third one will be my next pick. So stay tuned. And Parvati was in my next tier down for sure. And that is a tier full of people that I deemed virtually, not bulletproof, but so much less likely than everyone else outside of this tier to commit socially unforced errors in Survivor, just the people who are relentlessly cool. And Parvati was very near the top of that tier for me.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I picked Kim, yes?
Oh, or excuse you just... me. I do know you picked Kim, and I also okay. said Parvati is very near. So spoiler alert, Parvati may be coming off the board soon.
I was like, okay, well, I mean, I figured that was, as you only alluded to who was in your top three, I was like, okay, I guess we'll just talk about Parvati now also.
No, but, sorry. No, the funniest totally thing is Parvati's not even that third person. She's just also yeah. near the top tier of the Kim
she
tier.
She was. But yeah, I went with Kim. I think Kim also someone to not have any unforced errors. But I'm excited to see what Kim does. I'm hoping for her to come back. I actually think she might have a better chance at winning than some people think. But obviously, if I think she has a better chance at winning, but and also unlikely to get there, I think there is virtually no scenarios where she walks away with zero votes in this.
I'm with that. I am going to be really interested in the case of Kim Spradlin to see just what the other winners think of her, because ever since her first season in One World, such an obviously crushing performance, she has been in just the most rarefied air in all of the like Survivor greatest players of all time conversation. I think that's, you know, based on what we know at this point, with very good reason. But I don't think it is even close to necessarily the case that fellow Survivor winners are even thinking thinking in those terms to nearly the same extent that the Survivor Twitter kind of echo chamber has built her up over the years. And while there is absolutely a possibility that everyone out there is super aware of what a lethal player Kim can be, I am also very much leaving the door open for them to be drastically underestimating her.
Yeah, I do think that there are enough people on this cast that are tapped into the online community that even if, say, some of the people like a Yul who is more removed from the community, I think there's no way an Adam, a Nick, a Sophie, a Tyson does not immediately say, oh, no, Kim is regarded as the best. She is very, very dangerous.
That's true. That is certainly a compelling point that there are going to be plenty of people out there who know the scoop. I just don't know. It seems like they're also going to be, I guess, a couple, if not a few other people out there who are not really going to care that much necessarily, or think that that kind of thing is super important.
Yeah. And like we said, Kim is phenomenal socially. I think that she is fairly well connected, and it's not as obvious how well connected she is as some of the other big names. So I am very, very excited to see Kim finally play for a second time.
Yeah. Looking very much forward to Parvati's second time out there as well. So yeah, I guess it is back on me now. And because I've already slightly tipped this pick, I guess I'll officially take Parvati off the board here at this point. She was also near the top of this tier that I have Kim in as well, of the people that I just don't see making unforced errors very often when they're out there playing the game and having that reputation as one of the best players in history in the timelines where she's at Final Tribal Council. I think is, you know, maybe based on Heroes versus Villains, I should be rethinking Parvati's reputation being helpful for her in Final Tribal Council. But I still feel good about Parvati being one of the more generally respected players out there and someone a lot of people would be okay with becoming kind of the champion of champions. Although I will happily grant, I'm sure she's going to have an uphill battle in terms of being viewed as a threat the entire way, the same way she has every single time she's returned.
Yeah, Parvati for me was actually kind of middling for my picks, only because I feel like if she does make it there, it's probably with some other big names. I don't think any of the other contestants are really going to allow themselves to get there with someone who is that far above their level, especially like Parvati. And I don't think she is – I think she's great socially in terms of advancing herself. I don't think she is – as great socially in terms of getting people to vote for her at the end. As much as I love her and was excited and at the time was very disappointed she didn't win Heroes versus Villains, I have come around to very much understanding why that was the case.
Yeah. So very happy to have Parvati on the squad here, although she is certainly someone, as are many people in the cast, that I'm very willing to acknowledge. We may see a whole different side of a lot of these people based on their eventual result and the way that the producers end up feeling like they need to tell this story. And Parvati could definitely be someone, a high-risk candidate in that regard, in terms of maybe if it doesn't end up going her way, we see a much less glowing version of Parvati than we've seen on previous seasons where she never does worse than, like, fifth place or whatever.
Yeah, to see like the not just like the Parvati villain edit, but like the Parvati like downfall would be so disappointing to me. But I really do think there is like a wide range of outcomes. I don't know. I think she cares and I think she's very competitive, but I don't know if she is going to lay it all out there to the same degree that some of the other big players are going to. So I'm a little nervous for her.
Okay. So with my number five overall pick, I'm going to take the other person who was in that top tier for me, along with Boston Rob and Sandra, and that is Amber. Just because of a similar point that we flagged up with Boston Rob, her husband is going to be on the jury in virtually every timeline where she is in the finals, and that to me seems like an automatic vote in her favor.
Yes, I very much, Amber was the other person I was considering. I had her pretty high on my draft board, and this was, of course, I shouldn't have assumed, but I was like, maybe there's the 1% chance he didn't think of that. But she would have been much lower down my draft board had Edge of Extinction not come into play about 12 hours ago for us. But there's so many scenarios where she is at the end, he is not. My only concern is, like we said, with the amount of groupthink on Edge of Extinction, I could see it coming down to the point where it's like, okay, it's Tyson, Amber, and like Sandra, and like Rob knows his vote is not going to count at all when it goes to Amber. Maybe he doesn't throw it that way.
I think he still is voting for Amber.
I think so too.
I think that is, if he doesn't vote for Amber, he becomes the new Sierra voted out her mom.
I don't think that he minds bad press, but I think that it is accurate. Again, he was my next pick for sure.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Amber skyrocketed up my draft board overnight, or I guess this morning, with this news being in play, just knowing that anyone who doesn't quit is going to be on the jury, presumably, assuming they keep the same kind of mechanic as the first time around. So Amber seemed like a lottery pick at the very least here in the top five. I am someone who is generally quite high on Amber's chances in this season. Spent a lot of money on her in the auction draft that we ended up doing, so maybe that's just wishful thinking. But what do you think about Amber's overall chances here?
I am not quite as high on Amber. Amber has not played in a very long time. I don't know how much I know she's probably been watching, but how much is she paying close attention to like the advanced social strategy that comes into play now and all of the twists and everything else? I think you could very well end up in a scenario where, like in All Stars 1, Amber ends up at the end with a Boston Rob and gets votes. I am not quite as high on her winning as I know a lot of other people are.
Yeah, I think for me, it is just the fact that she hasn't played in quite a while, I don't view as a negative. I think having Boston Rob as a husband can only help, especially as we seem to be rapidly transitioning into the production interference phase, the overt production interference phase of Survivor, where it's become just shameless, as far as I'm concerned. And I think Amber's kind of personality type, we saw the first time around in All Stars, I think for returning player juries is about as good as you can draw it up, where she's never going to go out of her way to offend anyone. No one's going to be upset about the idea of losing to Amber, as far as I can tell. And I think that's pretty important when so many huge egos are in play.
I do think that there are a few, specifically some of the newer winners, who may have grown up and been disappointed to not see Boston Rob win and may not be as excited to see Amber be the second two-time winner of Survivor.
I'm sure there is that school of thought out there as well. So there goes Amber and Scally. It is back on you.
All right. I'm going to go with someone else who I think has a very decent shot of winning. I also think they are on paper a big threat, but I'm not sure that the cast will see them this way. And given just how likable they are, I have a very hard time seeing them getting zero votes. I'm taking Jeremy off the board with my next pick.
Okay. Jeremy, full disclosure, was actually quite a bit down my board. I've over the years been, as far as I know, the literal number one biggest Jeremy detractor after his game in Survivor Cambodia. I felt like Jeremy was an all-time case in getting completely whitewashed treatment from the editors and just looking glowing at every opportunity. And he is one of the lead candidates that I referenced earlier in terms of potentially coming back out here and looking a hell of a lot different than he did in the timeline where he ended up winning that season. But that being said, I still obviously believe in Jeremy to a great deal as a player overall. And while I don't see him getting exactly zero votes too often, just when it came down to me for splitting hairs in terms of who has the, I guess upside is the wrong term to use, but who could rub people the wrong way to an extent we may not have anticipated based on their winning season, Jeremy was a name that stood out for me.
Okay, no, that's completely fair. I know that his edits between his first and second seasons definitely had some differences. I just, from reports of meeting him in person from every Survivor player that's ever talked about him on a podcast, it's been absolutely glowing in terms of playing with him or meeting him outside of the game. I think that he is also decently well-connected, and I have a very hard time seeing him come away with exactly zero.
Yeah, I will happily grant that. It's fairly unlikely that Jeremy comes away with exactly zero. What do you think about Jeremy's just overall prospects as a winner? He's someone I know is going high in a lot of like must-win drafts and auction drafts and things of that nature.
Yeah, I think Jeremy, if you look at the cast physically, Jeremy certainly is going to have a hard time finding meat shields like he did on his last season. But there are just so many big names that I really do think Jeremy is going to have a field day hiding behind all of them and letting them take the bullets for him.
Yeah, it's hard to draw up a better situation for a lot of these people than having literally Boston Rob and Tony back there. It seems like plenty of the former winners probably would have been done forever just based on their own presumed chances of obviously, you know, not being viewed as an enormous threat, having seen what happens to pretty much every former winner who returns. I think Jeremy's got to be very excited about this circumstance under which he's returning.
Yeah, I definitely think Jeremy is going to know how to play this. Well connected. I think he knows the game. I think he is not even trigger happy. I think he actually is fairly conservative in his play, but I think that he knows the game well enough to play around what is in store for him on this season.
Sure. And so you have another pick here now.
Yeah, I am oscillating between two people. Ultimately, I think I'm going to go with the person that I think is never ending up in the final three and take Tony off the board.
That is an interesting strategy that I probably should have considered before setting up my draft board. I love that idea of they can't get no votes if they don't make the finals.
Yep, he's not making the finals. And if Tony does make the finals, there is that chance that Tony rubs people the wrong way to the point where he gets absolutely zero votes. But I think at least one or two people is going to have the respect for Tony's game of you are an enormous target, thought you'd go out second just like last time, and somehow you made it here. You deserve it.
Yeah, I think Tony's out in terms of coming back and winning this season just because of the giant target and the unlikelihood of him making the final three. I think he's almost like Diet Sandra in a sense, where he's even less likely, I would say, to be there in the end. But if he does end up making it there, it's going to be pretty tough for people to overlook just what he had to overcome, I would imagine, in any circumstance where he's there on day 39. But that being said, he is another person who stood out to me in terms of we may see a less, I'm not going to say less exciting, but a less rootable version of Tony in timelines where things don't work out for him.
Yeah, also agree that that is very much on the table. I really think that even with his antics being, you know, portrayed negatively, there's definitely going to be his like fan base is going to stick by. I'm not so sure how the casuals will view him, but I think Tony is unfortunately not going to be in long enough for him to have that turn.
Mm-hmm. So it is back over to me now. One of these picks is going to be easy, and hopefully as I'm giving the rationale for this next pick, I can then come up with the pick that will follow. But for the easy pick, I will take Wendell off the board at this point. He is another person who is in the tier for me of I don't have much reason to believe, as things stand today, that this guy is going to be going out there making virtually any unforced errors in terms of rubbing people the wrong way. I think he could actually be in the finals a decent amount. I don't think he's going to be someone who anytime he's in the finals is going to automatically be a huge threat to win, but I have a virtually impossible time seeing how Wendell could be there and get zero jury votes.
Yeah, I think the only way that really happens is if he ends up with two people who are just much, much larger names than him. I do think Wendell, in terms of his winning chances, I think they're fairly good, but I could see it being that the bigger names and or more old school players see Wendell as one of the bigger threats of the like last few winners in terms of how well he's connected and just how likable he is known for being. I agree. I don't see Wendell getting zero votes, but he is not quite as high up my draft board.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So haven't made much progress in terms of coming up with my next pick here, but I suppose let's go. I'm trying to now find a way to snipe your pick and implement your strategy of, hey, they can't get zero votes if they don't make it to the finals, but no one's really jumping off the page at me just yet. So with that in mind, I guess I will just take the next person on my tier of I don't see them making any socially unforced errors or virtually ever rubbing people the wrong way, which I think is a lot of what comes down to being a zero vote finalist in many cases. Although I will happily grant that circumstances can also just be as unfortunate as possible to result in someone becoming a zero vote finalist. I think Steven in Tokenshins is a perfect example of that, where he ends up in the exact final situation he was trying to avoid, and there's not much he could have done about that. And incidentally, we may be like the number one podcast for zero vote finalists. I would say of the Survivor alumni who have been on this show multiple times, I'm pretty sure the top three appearances have been, in terms of number of appearances, are Steven, Spencer, and Albert, all of whom have been zero vote finalists at one point or another. So I don't mean at any point to make it sound like being a zero vote finalist is necessarily a disparaging kind of dishonor. It's something we certainly understand here on the Dom and Colin Network, but with all of that meandering out of the way, I guess give me Ethan. How in the world is Ethan ever going to make anyone so angry, or enough people so angry that the jury says it's not worth even considering Ethan? I feel like there's going to at least be someone in this group of 17 people willing to throw this guy a vote after, his incredible story over these last 18 years.
Yeah. Again, I am doing a rewatch. I love Africa. I love Ethan. I am so, so excited to see him back, excited to watch him play. I'm a little worried that the game may have passed him by. I know he was paying attention to the show as of a few years ago. Is he still? I'm not quite as sure. And is Ethan as hungry to win this game? Also really not as confident in that. So I think there is a scenario in which Ethan could walk away with zero votes, although I do think it is unlikely.
So when we were setting up this recording time for this draft podcast, and just floating the idea around initially, I said to you, I have a fire take already for this draft, and the fire take, it pertains to Ethan, and that's why I was trying to find some way to have any other pick come off the board here, but it seemed like the time had just come. But I am with you. I actually think there is a very decent chance that the game has completely passed Ethan by, and that would be the timeline that I would be worried about in terms of Ethan potentially being there, getting zero votes. Everyone very much liking Ethan, but not necessarily feeling like he is the best representative to be the ultimate winner of winners if he's just been kind of the nice guy along for the ride the whole way.
Yeah, and we do see that pattern in All-Star seasons where, especially in the past, where someone who was more inoffensive has taken it, but I don't know that that is going to be the case. It didn't happen in Game Changers, not that we talk about that season, but I am not so sure that this cast in particular is going to be looking to reward someone who is definitely more passive and also not as well connected with this group.
So I mean, Ethan could go a ton of different ways. I'm really hoping we can avoid the timeline where Ethan just doesn't really click with a lot of people early on, and kind of like Tom Westman in Heroes versus Villains, and is basically never really included in the actual goings on out there, strategically, and maybe isn't super motivated to kind of work his way in. I think Ethan could be one of the most exciting stories in the timelines where things end up going well for him. And in terms of casual appeal, I think even after all these years, Ethan is probably up there, not on the same level as obviously Boston Rob and probably Sandra, but I don't think he's too far behind like the Parvatys of the world in terms of honestly just recognizability and people loving Ethan even after 2 decades.
In terms of while I'm doing the rewatch, I will show friends, family, whoever's around, especially the early seasons, and say, "Who do you recognize from this cast?" And immediately everyone, Ethan, oh my God, yeah, of course, I know him. So I don't think, while I do think he's very recognizable, I don't know that especially the newer crop of winners is looking at Ethan remotely as that big of a threat. I don't see many scenarios in which he goes out so easily at the beginning. Ethan is my one worry of if he were to get voted out that early, if he were to find Edge of Extinction not worth it. But I am very, very excited and frankly floored to have Ethan back
I hadn't
at this
even,
point.
I hadn't even considered the idea of any of these people actually quitting.
Yeah, I don't think, again, I think we are having 17 jurors, unless barring any medical evacuations. But in looking through the board, I was like, all right, if there was going to be one, Ethan may be the number one pick for me.
Yeah, that's, I don't even know how I'd begin to evaluate that, but I don't super hate the call just because it does seem like the passion for the game Survivor, in the case of Ethan, may be drastically lower than virtually anyone else in the cast.
Yeah, I don't think that he has anything to prove. I don't think that he looks at this as the greatest thing he'll ever do in his life whatsoever, whereas I think that multiple other people do. And if he were to get voted out that early, especially, I never thought Ethan would play Survivor again due to health concerns and everything else. Obviously, he's been cleared for it, but I don't know that sitting on an island with a very tiny chance to get back in the game is appealing to him at this time.
Right. Okay, it is back over to you.
Okay. Someone who, again, I see, actually, I see more in the Jeremy mold that I was talking about. You may disagree in terms of their likability in general, but I don't think you do. I am going to take Tyson off the board. Only in that I don't see many scenarios in which Tyson gets to the end and gets zero votes. I think he makes it there a lot more often than I would like for this draft, but I think he's very likable and also active enough of a game player in that he will get votes at the end.
So Tyson, over the years, hasn't been another person that I feel like I am the literal number one detractor of his winning game. And while I do agree that Tyson is generally phenomenal socially, I will never get the image out of my mind of him blundering his way into drawing a rock at Final Six, and then after it happens to go the right direction for him, telling Katie Collins, hey, that's your seat over there on the jury. That is not, to me, a super elite, flawless, socially impeccable survivor player who's not going to make mistakes too often. I think Tyson could be another person that we see a potentially different side of depending on how things go.
That's completely fair, but in looking at the list of people that we have left, there are either people who I think are worse socially or are more likely to get zero votes for playing a passive game, and I think that Tyson is the best intersection of those two things left for me on the board.
I don't even necessarily disagree with that, actually, at this point.
Yeah. So that was my first pick, correct?
Yes, it was.
Okay, and then I'm going to take someone. I don't think this is wishful thinking. I just want them on my team, though, at the same time. I am taking Natalie Anderson off the board.
I already had her on your team.
I'm in love. I'm thrilled. I was disappointed not to see her on Game Changers, then thinking maybe she dodged a bullet from not being associated with this. I am so incredibly thrilled to have her back. I find her to be better socially than you would think. I think she's extremely likable. I think, yeah, she could rub a few people the wrong way, but is she going to rub enough people the wrong way where she's getting zero votes? I very much highly doubt that. And I think her threat level in terms of winning is perfect in that she is not necessarily looked at as the most dangerous player, but is fully willing to do absolutely anything to win this game.
Totally. I think Natalie is one of the highest upside players on this season, for sure. I've selected her very highly in a lot of the drafts that I've done in terms of succeeding, likelihood to succeed on this season. At the same time, I have seen The Amazing Race, and I would have Natalie as another person very high on the list of, we could see a completely different side of her this time around on Survivor that may blow people away if they've only become familiar with her through San Juan del Sur. And while I agree that she's probably going to have, in pretty much any timeline, at least a few people with whom she is quite tight that end up on the jury, I do worry that there could be kind of an understanding that if she is in the finals and has rubbed enough people the wrong way, a vote for Natalie could potentially be a wasted vote.
Yeah, that's fair. In terms of The Amazing Race, I will say how you speak to family and to a sibling, and especially a twin, I would assume, is very, very different from how you are speaking to people on an island that you are competing against for $1 million rather than someone you are competing with and have that relationship with. I know she did, get into that argument with Rocker on her first season, but otherwise we did see her get like majorly blindsided in Jeremy's vote off, and she had a very, very calm reaction. Do I think that happens 10 out of 10 times? No, but I definitely am excited to see that is in her for at least, I would say, a majority of timelines. Mm-hmm. I would bet on.
Yeah, I maybe we will get the like Goldilocks version of Natalie this time around, where she just has like a middling result and we see a more balanced version as opposed to the Amazing Race version or the Survivor winner version.
See, my ideal version is that we get like all of the, some would say bad behavior. I would say fun, entertaining content. And also Natalie wins, but I definitely think that's unlikely.
Right. I would love it if she could get the Tony and Kageyan treatment.
Yeah, exactly. And knowing that Natalie is such a fan of Tony, pretty much probably I would say mostly because I think she only watched Kagayan before she went on her season, but she loves Tony. She would love to work with Tony. I would love, 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 love to see that happen, and hoping we do.
I mean, Natalie may be the low-key candidate to be the person who shows up and doesn't recognize half the people in the cast.
That is true. I am also a little worried about her association with Tony, should she decide to align with him going the way of like an Aubrey in Game Changers, where I don't think the same exact thing's going to happen, but where it's like, oh, you were associated with him, you're out, we're not dealing with you right now. Mm-hmm. So that does concern me in terms of Natalie's early game, whereas I see very few other timelines where she even goes pre-merge.
Yeah, I'm, as I said, very high on Natalie's overall equity in this group. There are just some fairly drastic downsides, I would say, compared to some of the other higher picks here.
That's completely fair.
Yeah. All right. So it is back over to me, and I continue to super struggle with where I'm going to go, but I think I'm just going to play this one really cautiously, and I will fully own, at this point, I don't have a ton of, we are entering the zone for me where seeing any of these people get zero votes would not nearly blow me away to the point that it would for a lot of people who are off the board already. But going to return to my just kind of, I don't see them making too many unforced errors. And sorry for using that terminology so often, but it was a great week of Wimbledon recently to date this podcast. I will make the super conservative picks of, for similar reasons, I'm just going to reveal both of them right now because I feel they tie in together kind of nicely here. I will take, in I guess, this order for the official record, give me Denise and Yule in terms of I just cannot see either of them being there in a final tribal situation with too many people on the jury just completely either mad at them or unwilling to vote for them. It's more just the they were too passive that I would be nervous about them not getting any votes.
Yeah, I definitely am. I think I'm a little lower on probably both of these players in terms of win equity than most of the fandom as a whole is, especially Denise. I know that she is a very, very popular winner pick. And while I enjoy Denise a lot, I think it is a lot easier to for the casual to say, oh, Denise went to every tribal and therefore she is an elite player, whereas Kim has this absurdly great reputation. But then, like, why is that? It's a little harder to, like, succinctly put into words. So I do think Denise's target is probably even too big for what it should be. So I'm a little worried about her there. And Yule, I am also worried in, like, an Ethan, where I don't think Yule has virtually any connections on this cast in terms of who he has kept up with. I know he's played with Parvati and probably talked to other people, but I'm not so sure that Yule is close with particularly anyone.
That's absolutely fair. And I, as I said, I am at the point now where it wouldn't surprise me that much to be losing the draft with any of the picks that I'm going to end up making from this point forward. It just, again, goes back to, at this point for me, the kind of all-star juries that I've seen in the past tend to either be looking to actively reward someone who played aggressively or looking to actively punish someone who played too aggressively. And I don't see really Denise or Yule in too many timelines falling into either of those categories, but I can virtually never see them falling into that latter category.
No, I definitely agree with that. There are I would just say there are one or two people for me that fall slightly above, at least one other person that falls above them on my board. So I was really preparing for them to come off on that pick, and it did not happen.
Okay. I think it may be the person who is the number one left on my board at this point, but let's find out.
We'll see. I'm going to take Adam.
That is exactly who it was.
Yeah. So Adam, I think he gets, especially I would say, probably came more so from the casual audience. He got a lot of crap after his season in terms of people thinking, which is obviously untrue. People thought that he only won because of his story and that he did not play a good game. I mean, due to every report that has come out, obviously that's not true. I think Adam, because of that, is going to want to prove that no, I definitely deserve to win this. And in what I have gleaned, I believe Adam will be playing a more aggressive game this time around.
My big concern about Adam, and I think this is, without this one case, he probably would have come off the board a long time ago for me, but I am nervous that Adam may be met with the same kind of sentiment that Spencer was in Cambodia. Especially with his kind of upfront demeanor strategically with people and his kind of bluntness, that if he were to find himself making it all the way through the end of the game, there could be a non-zero number of jurors, and I think Boston Rob would be a very likely leader of this school of thought of, we are not rewarding this kid.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I know that they have hung out at a number of poker tournaments and reality events, so I don't think they have the worst relationship, in where I don't think he is going to lead a vote as aggressively as he may have otherwise, but I definitely could see that being the case.
Maybe it's unfair of me to single Boston Rob out, because you are right. They have, as do many people, you know, Jeremy and Tyson are big poker players, but Boston Rob is someone who has been on the wrong end of a bitter jury, at least arguably in the past. Maybe he is someone who will be more interested in finding the like best game player. It's hard to tell at this point. We've never actually seen Boston Rob cast a jury vote, but I do think Adam runs the risk of people feeling like he would be too satisfied with himself if it ended up working out his way.
I do think that's fair. I'm not quite as concerned with this crop of players with that being the case, but I definitely do see your concern. I'm very excited to see Adam back. I am decently high on his winning chances. I like that he's willing to play more aggressive, but also has the social game to back it up. I'm nervous for him, but excited to see what he can do ultimately.
And to clarify, when Dom and I over on the Patreon feed, which anyone interested can find at patreon.com/Dom and Colin. There's already several other patron-exclusive Survivor 40 drafts up there, and the first one we did was 3.5 hours before we knew the final cast of 20 that was going to be on this season. We drafted all 38 winners in the history of Survivor based on a combination of likelihood to be out there and likelihood to do well if out there. And spoiler alert, I used my first overall pick on Adam. I very much believe in Adam's upside, similar to what I was saying about Natalie, on whom I used my second overall pick in that draft. It is just, at the same time, you know, with a style of play that is going to produce that kind of upside, I think there's also going to be a solid, maybe not solid, but some chance of drastic downside, and rubbing, you know, taking an aggressive approach that is just not what the jury ends up being interested in. And that would be the concern I have about Adam, despite feeling very good overall about his chances.
Yeah, I did not mean to disparage your Adam fandom, but with my next pick, going into, I am nervous about this one, and I don't really want to see it come through, but I don't think Ben is walking away with zero votes if he ends up there.
Oh, interesting. Ben was the second from the bottom on my board, but that, again, may just be wishful thinking.
Yeah, I think that Ben is likely to either be a big target because they have seen him idle and challenge himself to the end of the game and don't want to let that happen. But I also do think that in the scenario where there is production interference, where he does luck his way into it, I think there's going to be at least a few people who have a hard time giving him not one vote from the jury, unfortunately.
Yeah, I wonder. And again, maybe this is a completely pointless thought, because no one after 39 days of a new season is going to probably put too much weight on, you know, what the person in question did their first time around. But I do feel like Ben may be one of the less respected winners out there, which, you know, in historic All-Star seasons, I guess, has not really mattered that much come final tribal council time the second time around. But if it were to hinder anyone in terms of, do we really want that person to be the ultimate champion of champions? If Ben really won his first time because of a string of idols and a fire challenge, and then finds himself in the end here again, potentially because of Edge of Extinction and a string of idols, or something not kind of considered classic Survivor, I do wonder if Ben could suffer from being viewed as someone who's never really won the game in a conventional sense.
I would say that is true amongst the fan base. Do you think that sentiment is there amongst this cast?
I would imagine if it's there on day one, I can't imagine it's going to be too prevalent on day 39.
Yes, and I really think that you are looking at a very small number of people on the cast, if any, who really buy into that, if at all. Again, we saw Aubrey and David vote for someone who was voted out of the game in fourth. I don't think that people are looking at someone who, if anything, I think he made big moves. I respect it. I don't unfortunately, I don't have the faith for people to not reward that gameplay.
Yeah. All right. So it is back over to me, and we are certainly at the point where I don't feel that great about any of these picks. But I guess at this point, I will take Officer Sarah, who I have seen play a very aggressive game in the past, and you know, having won an all-star season before this, I think could be a point in her favor in a scenario where she ends up in the finals as well. And while I will happily acknowledge that she could regularly be rubbing some people the wrong way, I don't see her being the type to be cast aside for not really playing the game.
Yeah, I think that Sarah is going to be very, very willing to mix it up. Someone who probably should have the target that Tony has, in that they played pretty similar games. I think that Sarah benefited just from not having as loud of an edit throughout the entire season, but I think she is just as willing to cast aside any alliance that she has in order to win the game.
Yeah. What do you think about Sarah's just overall chances?
I think that Sarah is likely to, I could see her going early, or I could see her going very deep. I don't really see a middling run for Sarah on this. I really think it's going to depend on that perception of her. And if it is that she is someone who is as dangerous as Tony, I think she's out as early. And if it's not there, I think Sarah has the tools to go very, very far in the game.
Yeah, I'm with that. And while also, you know, I think she definitely has the tools to go very far in the game, but I am also nervous about Sarah being an early boot in a lot of timelines. Although I guess nervous is the wrong word when I'm rooting for that, and that would also be good for me in this draft.
Yes, I would say definitely good for you in the draft. I would say I don't see her going out in the middle too often. I think there will be enough big names left, and also people who are outwardly playing more aggressively. But I can see the spot where Sarah gets to the end and has rubbed enough people the wrong way, like we were speaking on some others.
Yes, and so was that my first pick? Yes, it was.
That was your first pick.
Unfortunately, now I need to pick another person. So I guess let's complete the green team from my auction draft. All coming back on board to Team Colin, give me Michelle Fitzgerald, not getting any, or avoiding being the zero vote finalist. And obviously the major concern here is that she is someone who is viewed as not playing the game potentially as hard as an all-star jury would like to see it played, if they're going to be voting in terms of rewarding the ultimate champion of champions. But at the same time, I can't help but look at every single all-star season in the history of Survivor and feel like Michelle still has some equity here.
I do think that she definitely has equity. I think that the concern is she is recent enough where people who remember her season well and remember it as the season that Aubrey lost. I don't think it's a great way to look at the season, but I do think that a fair number of the more casual winners are going to see Michelle and not want to have that as the next two-time winner.
Okay, so it is back on you for the final two selections, and then I will be left with the default person.
Yes, so just to elaborate a tiny bit more on Michelle,
Think...
No, not at all. It was a sentence. I do think that of the – these were my bottom four picks that were left, but I do think that Michelle is the least likely to be rubbing people the wrong way out of who is left by far.
Yeah, I would say these were obviously my bottom four, but Michelle, I would almost have in like a separate tier above the other three.
That's definitely fair.
Okay.
All right.
So let's find out where this is going to go.
Someone who I'm very nervous for, I have, I'm rooting for quite a bit, but I can see them either rubbing people the wrong way, or also not playing as visible a game in which they end up with zero to few votes at the end. I'm taking Sophie off the board.
Yeah. Sophie, I guess, oh, actually, you know what? These were not my bottom four because Ben was previously at this point in my draft as well. But Sophie was initially third from the bottom for me, just, you know, despite I love Sophie and I have a ton of respect for her as a player. I think she could also just be someone that people on day 39 decide they are not super interested in seeing come away from a season that satisfied with themselves.
Yes, I am very much rooting for Sophie. She's near the top of the board of who I'm rooting for on this season, but I see too many timelines where she does get, I think there's a decent chance she goes home early, unfortunately, but I also think there's a decent chance that she does get to the end, and I unfortunately think she needs to be amongst some of the people down towards the bottom of this list in order to win, unfortunately.
Yeah, and in the jury's defense, if Sophie were the next two-time winner of Survivor, as much as I love her, she would definitely be very annoying about it.
I don't disagree. I would live for the showing off, but I know that other people would definitely find it not so palatable.
Right, and to clarify, that is, you know, if I were in those shoes, I'm sure I would be super annoying about it as well.
For sure.
And I'm positive I would constantly suffer from the kind of Spencer syndrome of people not wanting me to, you know, not wanting to see me so obviously satisfied with myself.
That's very fair, but as a day one Sophie stan, I would be very happy to see her brag about it for the rest of time on Twitter. But unfortunately, I don't think we're going to get that chance.
Yeah, I would love to see the scenario where Sophie can kind of Kaiser Soze her way through this as probably one of the lower target individuals initially, but I do worry that perhaps not everyone picks up on the benefits of Sophie's overall vibe the same. Benefits is the wrong word, but not everyone necessarily clicks with the way Sophie handles herself in social situations to the extent that people like you and I do.
That's very fair.
I'm having trouble. I'm trying to find the right way of phrasing that, but I think Sophie is kind of an acquired taste that 39 days may not be long enough for.
Yeah, I am hoping that since Sophie played, I think she was 21 on her first season, I think she's definitely developed a few more skills in that area where she will be able to get along with a wider variety of people, but I am definitely nervous for her going into the season.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, as much as we do love Sophie, I have never felt like it's unfair to say that she essentially won because they were voting against Coach.
Yes, I think that while that is very true, I definitely gave Sophie a lot of credit in recognizing that that would be the case in a lot of scenarios.
100%. 100%. She saw it coming a mile away, played directly into it, did the completely right thing, but that may not be an option in a season like this.
No, the very, very true. I just was made sure to get it out there.
Completely. I'm totally on board with that. I don't mean to make it sound like a bad thing to recognize the obviously best strategy and implement it.
Yeah. Okay. And out of the two left on the board, I am going to go with the one who I don't think will actively be hiding their gameplay from viewers, the producers, and their fellow competitors. I will take Nick.
Okay. Nick was actually the bottom person on my board.
Oh.
I think it's because I just decided, like, a few months ago, or whenever, it feels like a few months at this point, however long we've known that Nick was going to be on this cast, he was the person who stood out to me as new Vetus, like the lead candidate to be the person that everyone is correctly very sketched out by and is just unable to overcome that.
I mean, that's very fair. I would love to see a Vetus-esque run for Nick on this season. But I unfortunately do not have the confidence that you do in that being the case. I think that Nick being a recent and more low-key winner, I don't think will be viewed as quite the threat that some of the others are. I I'm having a hard time saying whether I am enthusiastic or whether I think it's whether I'm excited or, you know, having a hard time seeing him get along with a number of people because he just hasn't had the years to build these bonds with the majority of this cast. Whereas, as we've said, Sandra has been since the day she got out of the game preparing for this day. But I think that Nick is not going to be looked at as the biggest threat of the recent winners.
Yeah, one thing that I think I've brought up in some of these other Season 40 podcasts, but I really do think it's going to be a pretty big factor for a lot of these players. The yes or no, do they start on Boston Rob's tribe or not? I think could be a big difference maker for a ton of folks. And in particular with Nick, I just have such a hard time seeing Boston Rob being eager to bring Nick into whatever his big group is. I think he's going to view him, because Nick is so recent, and played such a kind of duplicitous game with all of his, one-on-one alliances with all the little nicknames, during David versus Goliath. I feel like, Nick is in the scenario where he's with Boston Rob going to try to link up with Boston Rob and sell himself as like the little brother who's just going to be a loyal vote for the alliance. And I don't think Boston Rob is going to buy that for 1 second.
Yeah, that's completely fair. I definitely think that that's a lot of timelines for him where I don't know that he necessarily is going to be in with the group. But since we are drafting people who are not going to be getting votes at the end, I think Nick has scenarios where he doesn't make it to the end in a ton of scenarios in that I don't think he's very well connected. But I think we only have one person left on the board in Danny. I don't think that Danny is going to be playing as visible a game where people are going to feel great about giving her the title of the second two-time winner of Survivor.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I would also probably go back to the point you made earlier about Danny. I'm guessing will probably be actively hiding things from production once again. I don't think they're going to love that, and I don't know how eager they're going to be to have Danny be the person that is getting the kind of scale thumbed in their favor over the course of this season.
Yeah, if Nick or Danny is finding an idol, it is going to be Nick, and it's not Danny's fault that it's not going to be her.
Exactly. And what do you think about Danny in terms of, like, I guess, best case scenario? Is she near the bottom as well for you in terms of just overall winning prospects because of all of the meta considerations?
Yeah, she's pretty low on my board in terms of I don't think she is very well connected. I don't think she is going to be playing an aggressive game. And I just see very few timelines in that she makes it there in general. I don't know who she really beats on this cast in many timelines.
Yeah, I mean, certainly anything is possible. I'm going to say I'm certainly not ruling Danny out as a potential winner of this season, especially, you know, we are currently actually in the middle of rewatching Guatemala over once again on the Patreon feed every Saturday, new bonus episodes once again over at patreon.com/Dom and Colin. So Danny has been someone that I've seen quite a bit of lately, and having seen so much of Danny, there is no way I would be counting her out in any season of Survivor. It is just it's such a looming question, you know, given that she was playing originally in 2005, she doesn't know, I would imagine, any of these people. Maybe more unanswered questions with Danny than pretty much anyone else, and I don't think she's going to be too inclined to give us those answers. So it could go, I think she is certainly a capable enough player for sure that she could make the social bonds and is a smart enough gamer to understand how the things have evolved, and she can figure out the right moves over the course of the game. But there are definitely going to be plenty of timelines where Danny is, I think, among the rest of the cast, considered almost an afterthought, either rightly or wrongly.
Yeah, and being decently high on Danny's game, like, I definitely respect the game she played on her first season. It's the type of game that we have seen all-star seasons having been won by, and being that she beat a returning player in the first time that she played with this exact game that I think she probably does need to play on this time out. For whatever reason, I don't see this group of people rewarding it, especially after spending 30 something days is on edge of extinction. I don't think that they're going to be very happy about voting for an extremely passive player in their eyes.
Yeah. Well, a lot, I'm sure, to be seen in terms of how this jury mentality ends up shaping over the course of season 39, and hopefully Edge of Extinction can give us some sort of insight into that. To quickly roll just back through the teams now that everyone has been selected, Scally, your team ended up, or I guess I'll start with my team because I ended up with the first overall pick. I took Sandra, Parvati, Amber, Wendell, Ethan, Denise, Yule, Sarah, Michelle, and Danny Boatwright. Scally, you had the second and third picks with Boston Rob, Kim, and then down the line, Jeremy, Tony, Tyson, Natalie, Adam, Ben, Sophie, and Nick. And I would once again like to just quickly go back and compliment you on what I would consider a brilliant piece of strategy in taking Tony so early. It had never crossed my mind that, of course, you can't get zero votes if you don't make the finals.
Yeah, it's similar. That's why I had people like Boston Rob and Sandra so high. But I don't think that they like, I think that it was a combined, they're not making it. And then also when they do make it, they're not getting zero votes.
Yeah.
So I definitely came into play on this draft.
So do you have an official season 40 winner pick at this hour?
Yeah, I keep getting nervous that I'm going to change it, but I think you see it coming a mile away. I'm going Natalie again for my official winner pick.
Okay. Edge of Extinction's not going to throw things off too much for you?
No, I think that she is ultimately, I think she's a great challenge competitor. So if anything, I think it only helps her. I don't see many challenges where she's going to be completely out of it. And I do think that she'll be playing an aggressive enough game that I'm not worried about it.
Okay. Yeah. Hopefully Edge of Extinction can keep its filthy little paws as far off the meaningful elements of this season as possible. But that is for sure just tremendously wishful thinking. That is never going to happen. I'm sure on finale night, it's going to throw a major wrench into things. But at this point, not much we can do about that. So, Scally, thank you so much for coming on and taking part. I have said before and will say again, the most underrated account on reality TV Twitter. Where can people be finding you?
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on. I am on Twitter at Brian_Scally. That is Brian_Scally, Scally. And there, and as we mentioned before, the Love Island wrap up for the next few weeks. It's a fun binge. I definitely think they're getting into the swing of things, and I'm excited to see how the rest of the summer goes.
So it's on 5 nights a week. What night is Love Island? What nights are the episodes not on for Love Island?
It is on Monday through Friday.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
Yep. And 8 o'clock every night. So I will be there, and then hopefully we see the challenge back soon after, and be back here for those.
Yeah, and I can't let you out of here without some quick just thoughts on the opening couple of weeks of Big Brother.
I'm disappointed. Also, sheer horror. We'll go back to. But I'm very not happy. Obviously, there's very few people in the house that I am left rooting for, and most of them are in the house, but also already voted out of the game. So it is nerve-wracking watching this season. Luckily, I am still holding on to Tommy, who is the front runner at this point in most people's eyes. My preseason winner pick and fellow New Yorker. I am definitely still pulling for him in that direction. He, while being involved in the definitely a messy large group, he hasn't been at the forefront of that, so I am hoping that he stays clean and pulls it out.
The new challenge for Big Brother casting is like finding people who aren't going to get canceled over the course of the season.
It's an impossible, you would think it would be slightly more possible, but it's just the hive mind of the Big Brother house is truly horrifying in the last few seasons.
Yeah. Well, all the best with the rest of that. I'm going to be happily over on the sidelines, it sounds like, for the rest of BB21, but I'm sure plenty of other off-season podcasts coming along the way. Until then, you can find me on Twitter at Colin Stone. You can find Dom on Twitter at DomHRV, and email us if you have any ideas for things we can be getting into while we wait for Survivor 39 to roll back around. So I believe that is going to do it for us today. Scally, thank you once again. I'm sure we will talk to you relatively soon as this off-season rolls along. Thanks for making it this far. Take care, everybody.